Stu Does America.
Now's the time of the show where I tell you what to do. Subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to hit the bell for notifications as well. Also, blazetv.com/Stu. Use the promo code Stu and you'll save $20. We also have merch if you want to check that out, StuDoesMerch.com. The code is Stu10. Carol Roth is here with the real scoop on Donald Trump's tariff plans. Illegal border crossings continue to plummet. We'll take a look at what's happening in Arizona specifically. But we're going to start by doing the left's lack of decency because, look, I mean, Trump was the guy in front of the cameras, right? Trump was the guy talking. He was the guy making all the big promises, talking about all the things that he's done so far in his first 6 weeks. But I don't know. Coming out of that speech, I think what I took from that is just the left is awful. Trump has obviously done a lot of good things, and we've spent a lot of time exhaustively detailing all of them. But to be honest with you, the left can't get out of its own way. I don't even know if Trump has to do a good job right now. He could actually do probably a pretty mediocre job, and he'd still be relatively popular. Trump vows to press ahead on reshaping America in a speech to Congress as Democrats register dissent. By the way, that's how that's covered. It's a dissent. We'll get into whether they're registering dissent or not. Let me give you kind of a taste of what Trump was going for here. He wanted to give a positive outlook for the future, talking about, the rise of small businesses and the American dream. Here is the way he kind of framed the entire speech last night.
Members of the United States Congress, thank you very much. And to my fellow citizens, America is back.
Woo! Yeah! Woo! I mean, this is, I will say, the format I could do without. I frankly am not a State of the Union fan. I wish the State of the Union was a letter. Now, this technically is not a State of the Union. It's a joint session of Congress speech, but it's basically the State of the Union. You just don't necessarily need a State of the Union because you just got the job 6 weeks ago. At least that's how it normally is, right? Now, presidents do this anyway. They wind up with this speech. But 6 weeks ago, Donald Trump had a big speech about what he was going to do. It might be an exception this year because of how much has gone on in the first 6 weeks. I mean, a pace that, and Trump talked about this at length, that is really just incredible. I mean, whether you like the stuff or not is not really the issue. He's got a lot done here in the first few weeks. I will re-up my point here that it used to just be a letter. It does. The Constitution does call for a State of the Union, essentially, to happen. It can just be a letter that's written, and so we can kind of check in on everybody. That's kind of what maybe a progress report from your kid's school, right? Like, that's what it basically is. Hey, here's where we are. This is working. This isn't. This is what we plan to do. Kind of give you an outline of what the next year or two is supposed to bring. Now it's this big hype thing where everyone goes in there and takes pictures and selfies and shakes everybody's hands and cheers for 9 minutes for every single statement. So, formatically, I could do without it. That being said, there's a lot to cover, and I thought Trump did a pretty good job. And he kind of set it up interestingly because he set it up as like, here's me. I'm going to give you a hopeful speech. And then I want to show you what the left is going to do, because everybody was on his right were the Democrats. And he kind of just set it up of no one over here is going to, no matter what I say. Like, they just hate me for me, and they're not, and the partisanship is real, and they're not going to cheer this on no matter what happens. Watch.
This is my fifth such speech to Congress. And once again, I look at the Democrats in front of me, and I realize there is absolutely nothing I can say to make them happy or to make them stand or smile or applaud. Nothing I can do. I could find a cure to the most devastating disease, a disease that would wipe out entire nations, or announce the answers to the greatest economy in history, or the stoppage of crime to the lowest levels ever recorded. And these people sitting right here will not clap, will not stand, and certainly will not cheer for these astronomical achievements. They won't do it, no matter what. Five times I've been up here. It's very sad. And it just shouldn't be this way.
It's interesting because at that point, there wasn't too much of the dissent and opposition going on. He kind of set it up to kind of tease everybody to say and kind of almost challenge them. Hey, You know, I'm going to announce a bunch of stuff here. Some of it you're probably going to like in reality. Some of it you can cheer along with. And, you know, I would say do that. Kind of challenging them to do it. Of course, they went the opposite direction. Democratic Representative Al Green was booted from Trump's address to Congress, doubling down on impeachment. Let me give you kind of a sense of how this was. And this is where our incentives in politics really wind up hurting all of us, because this stuff just got to happen. This performative nonsense is just built into our system now, and I don't know if there's any way to remove it. Here's Al Green.
Likewise, small business optimism saw its single largest one-month gain ever recorded.
Mr. President.
A 41-point jump.
Members are directed to uphold and maintain decorum in the House and to cease any further disruptions. That's your warning. Members are engaging in willful and continuing breach of decorum, and the chair is prepared to direct the sergeant at arms to restore order to the joint session.
Remarkable. He's still, Al Green, still see him on the screen, shaking his cane, yelling at Trump through all of this, jibber-jabbering about something. Just whiny, whiny, whiny people. Trump getting ready to move on here, go on to his next line. Still
Mr.
standing.
Mr. Green, take your seat. Green's. Take your seat, sir. Take your seat. Finding that members continue to engage in willful and concerted disruption of proper decorum, the chair now directs the sergeant-at-arms to restore order. Remove this gentleman from the chamber.
So Al gets to go home in his weird homeless man beard. Congratulations to Al Green. Not the singer, by the way. Not nearly as talented. There he goes, being waddling off into all of our memories. Now, remember, long ago, there was an incident with Barack Obama when he was giving a State of the Union, and Joe Wilson said, after Obama said he would not provide Obamacare to illegal immigrants, Wilson says, "You lie." That was it. That was a three-month controversy. It was shown how, basically, that was when they first started with the insurrectionist stuff with the Tea Party. It was because of people like Joe Wilson who say, "You lie," in a speech. Can you imagine such a thing? Unprecedented. And then Al Green does that, screams at him for all of this time. It was just absolutely embarrassing. By the way, might want to note, the next Democrat that ran for president, in their actual platform, was providing Obamacare to illegal immigrants. So, not a lie. Not a lie at all. But that's a whole different story. Al Green, seen outside. I'm not sure if, you know, I assume at this point he was about to go out and start begging for spare change. But here he is talking about the punishment he's going to get.
I'm willing to suffer whatever punishment is available to me. I didn't say to anyone, don't punish me. I said I'll accept the punishment, but it's worth it to let people know that there are some of us who are going to stand up against this president's desire to cut Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security.
Were you saying you have no mandate? Is that what you just said?
That's what he has no mandate to cut Medicaid. None.
Beard maintenance is important. And I want you to remember that, if nothing else, from this particular monologue. Now, it wasn't all of this, right? It wasn't all opposition. They were dressed idiotically, putting up signs, you know, just moronically. Rashida Tlaib with her little whiteboard writing things that I got some good tweets out of, frankly, afterward. You can go check those out. I'll leave those to Twitter. But the point is, they were idiotic and did exactly what you'd expect from Democrats in this particular moment. And then, you know, like the tone of it was, you know, it started off with kind of talking about all these big hopes for the future. You had that back and forth there. Trump, you know, was critical at times of Democrats, but generally speaking, was just talking about how great he was. And then kind of going into a litany of people who were in the audience and trying to highlight important issues. You know, he talked about Lake and Riley's mom was there, just a devastating part of the presentation. Of course, Lakin Riley was murdered by an illegal immigrant. He had some of that stuff going on. And then he went to talk about probably my favorite part of the entire speech, honestly, was him talking about DJ Daniel. This is a young kid who is a survivor of brain cancer, who just had a dream to be a police officer. And, like, I don't know. Like, normally I don't fall for the sappy stuff, but I just love this kid. I thought he was awesome. And let me give you a quick taste of that.
But in 2018, DJ was diagnosed with brain cancer. The doctors gave him 5 months at most to live. That was more than 6 years ago.
Oh, everyone's clapping that we see. It's interesting. A lot of clapping going on here. But not the whole room. He's wearing a little police officer uniform. If you didn't see this clip, everyone, it just seems like a really good kid.
Since that time, DJ and his dad have been on a quest to make his dream come true, and DJ has been sworn in as an honorary law enforcement officer, actually a number of times. Peace. The police love him, the police departments love him. And tonight, DJ, we're going to do you the biggest honor of them all. I am asking our new Secret Service Director, Sean Curran, to officially make you an agent of the United States Secret Service.
Really cool. Really cool. I mean, the kid just has fought through an impossible childhood, and this is what he wants. Like, he goes around wearing, like, a police officer uniform, like, around town. Like, this guy, he's just what he wants. He just loves the police. Just a really cool moment. And, like, you could say, well, it's not about policy or whatever else, but that's kind of the point here. How do Democrats not stand up and clap for him? What kind of ghoul do you have to be to not stand up and cheer for, by the way, an African-American child, his dream of being a police officer? There wasn't even policy attached to it. Like, at least with the Lincoln Riley thing, which is also inexcusable to not stand for this mother of a daughter who was murdered. At least there's a policy tie. Obviously, Donald Trump is implying that his policies may have prevented this particular incident. And, you know, maybe you don't want to stand for political purposes. I still think that's pretty despicable, frankly. I mean, if you saw the utter pain, I mean, you could see, you know, the color that was brought through the television set by just the pain on the face of the mother of Lincoln Riley, who has to keep reliving this, but wants to because she wants this to not happen to other people. It was just crushing. And how you can't stand up and just see the pain in the mother's eyes and just be like, oh, my God, we love you. We're praying for you. They can't even do that. But this kid just has cancer and wants to achieve something in his life. You can't even stand up and clap for him. And it's because they just reveal so much about themselves in these moments. It was absolutely absolutely revealing to a degree that even surprising to me. Honestly, I figure like you could stand up and clap for the cancer kid. Now, of course, when you happen to be this awful a person and you're on the left, it becomes more and more satisfying when you have a president like Donald Trump. Like, you know, there are parts of me at times where I kind of would like want, you know, more of a statesman in certain circumstances. Not then. I was totally fine with him calling Pocahontas Pocahontas. I was totally fine with it. And I was totally fine with this as well.
The media and our friends in the Democrat Party kept saying we needed new legislation. We must have legislation to secure the border. But it turned out that all we really needed was a new president.
Yeah. That was awesome. And by the way, I think the so far, we're 6 weeks in, so these determinations aren't fully made yet. But I think the most obvious success so far of the Trump start is the border. I mean, it's been clear cut, winning on the border so far. That doesn't mean it's going to last forever. It did tick up after a really good start in the first term. So we got to watch that closely. And legislation would help if it were sane. But right now we're in a pretty good position. So let me go through how people felt about the speech. Overwhelmingly positively. And, you know, I do a lot of polls here. I like to show you a lot of polls. And you know, I've been looking at public opinion for a very, very long time. One of the things you note about this is this type of event, these big national events, don't always give you the picture that you might think is going to happen when it comes to the polling. Because if you see like an event where you're like, OK, I think the Republican won by a little bit in a debate, you can be sure with 100% certainty that the Democrat will win the polling after that debate. Like, it's just always the way it happens. The same thing with these type of State of the Union speeches. If the speech was just okay, usually it's not going to be approved for a Republican. It is going to be approved by a Democrat. That doesn't necessarily mean it's bias. It sometimes means it's just, I mean, it could be bias, but not political bias. It could be response bias. It could be a bunch of different things. But generally speaking, that's the way these things turn out. That's why this poll is, I mean, I would say even for someone who looks at this crap all the time, legitimately a shocking number. Views of Trump's speech among speech watchers, 76% approved of the speech, only 23% disapproved. That is a remarkable number. There's a bunch of factors into that. Let me look at a little more detail here. Was the speech presidential? 74% said yes. Was it entertaining? 74% said yes. Was it inspiring? 71% said yes. Was it unifying? Unifying for Donald Trump, 62% said yes. Was it divisive? 46% said yes. Now, there's a couple of different theories as to why this may have happened this way. Maybe it was just a great speech and everyone loved it. But that's not, I mean, you know, Donald Trump, like there's 50% of the country can't stand the guy. So they don't say anything he does is good. How do you get to 76%? Some people are speculating that it was basically, you know, when your team loses, you don't want to watch a speech from the other guy, right? Like, so the Democrats are pissed off. They don't want to hear Donald Trump speak and take credit for a bunch of stuff for 90 minutes. So they didn't tune into the speech. And this was a poll of people who did watch the speech. So maybe Republicans and people who were more open to Trump are more highly represented in the poll. And that's why the number is good. Maybe, I mean, usually, certainly by party ID, that should have been sorted out by the weighting in the poll by CBS. So, I mean, I didn't do a deep dive on the methodology here, but like that should be caught. I mean, if they did any decent effort at all, that should be mostly caught. You could say maybe a lot of people who were Democrats, the Democrats that did show up to watch it, were more positive on Trump. And maybe they were Trump voters, even though they consider themselves Democrats. It's possible that could move it. I can't believe it would move it that much, though. That's kind of shocking. So there's a few different possibilities. Let me give you a last one, and it would indicate with this part of the poll. Having congressmen removed from chamber for interrupting Trump, do you support that or not? 76% approved. 24% disapprove, almost identical to the people, to the number that was approving of the actual speech itself. And that's why I went to the left's lack of decency to do today, because I think that's a big factor here. Other factors might be at play as well. But one of the first things that the American people saw, and a lot of times they only watch 15 or 20 minutes of these speeches, one of the first things they saw was Al Green standing up there, shaking his cane at the president and interrupting him over and over and over and over again. And you know what? The American people hate that. They don't like it. They don't like it when anyone does it. They want to be able to hear. I mean, because you're not only annoying the president and stopping the, again, we were told stopping an official proceeding was an insurrection. I guess not anymore. But like, it's not only just stopping them. It's not only stopping the speech. It's also wasting my time. I sat down to watch the speech because I wanted to watch the speech. And the fact that you get up there and stand up there and delay it, you're wasting minutes and minutes and minutes of my freaking time. It pisses people off. It's like with the people that go and they protest in the middle of the street and clog up traffic. You don't win any of those people that are there because of that. All those people that are sitting in traffic hate your guts now. It's not a very smart thing to do. And the fact that they don't lack the decency to not only sit there and listen to the speech, but can't even stand up and clap for a kid who's got cancer, just shows so much about them. And I think it's the part of the Democratic Party that the American people just don't like. They don't like the extreme politics. They don't like the insanity. They don't like the resistance. They don't like any of that crap. And the more the left shows it, the better it is for Republicans. And this is what's so interesting about this. The incentives included to make an event like that occur from Al Green are very interesting, because I think quite clearly the American people don't like that. They associate his actions with the Democratic Party at large, probably hurts them at some level. They feel bad for Donald Trump for getting, you know, for this having to happen. They don't like that it's happening to the president of the United States. There's still a respect for that office. And so they look at this and they say, it's good for Donald Trump. It's bad for Democrats. It's good for Republicans. But you know who else it's good for? Al Green. Because Al Green will get a sect of the resistance that will love him for doing this. They will donate tons of cash to him for doing this. They will retweet him and praise him, and articles will be written, and op-eds will be formed, and he will get all the praise in the world for doing that.
So the incentives are for him to do it. There's always somebody who will take that mantle because there's always somebody who cares more about themselves. I thought it was going to be Jasmine Crockett for sure. But the bottom line is it's always somebody there to step up and take that incentive and help themselves with the crazy tweet, with a crazy statement, with a big piece of resistance, even though it doesn't actually help their side of the argument. Let's be honest about it. Very few of them actually care about that. So that's kind of where we are now. And you might say that was kind of chaotic. That is a lack of decency. It's pathetic. I will say this. At least we're not Serbia. At least three Serbian lawmakers injured as smoke bombs and flares are thrown in parliament. And I went through this article. I'm trying to figure who threw the smoke bombs? Were they protesters that came in? There were protests going on outside. It was a very chaotic situation. But no, it was Serbian opposition lawmakers who were throwing smoke bombs. Now, you might say, that's really a lack of decency. That's really chaos. Might have made it a little more fun, I don't know, yesterday. But I will say, with all the violence going after Donald Trump, I really don't want to see that unfold. So you could say a lot of things about our country, and I will say most of them are true. But you can at least take this to the bank. Our politics very screwed up. We have a party who's completely insane that's representing half the country. But at least we're not throwing smoke bombs in Congress yet. You watched the speech last night. Donald Trump, of course, declaring the start of a golden age of America. It's got a nice ring to it, doesn't it? You know, all the moves he was doing, we saw all the details of the speech. And the golden age is something he's talked about for a while. Now, I want you to think about this. Experiencing your own golden age of audio with Raycon earbuds. Whether you're working at the gym, or working out, working at your office, maybe just trying to tune out the political noise. You're sick of hearing Al Green. Raycons deliver premium sound wherever you go. I have Raycons. I love my Raycons. They have over tens of thousands of five-star reviews. Their latest model is a game changer as well. 32 hours of battery life, so you got a lot of episodes of Studios America you can listen to. Multi-point connectivity to pair with two devices simultaneously. Active noise cancellation to block out distractions. And they're starting at like half the price of other premium audio brands. Raycons make high-quality sound accessible for everybody. And 30-day happiness guarantee. You can try them risk-free. I will say my wife had, long time ago, had bought the earbuds from Apple. And she's listening to those things. She loses them one day. And she uses these things all the time. And she's like, I need to get more earbuds. I'm like, before you do that, try my Raycons. You're going to love them. She tried them. She loved them. She's like, I can't believe this. I'm going to the gym, and they're not falling out of my ear like the stupid earbuds are. Visit buyraycon.com. Buyraycon.com/stew. Get 20% off right now on their best-selling everyday earbuds. It's buyraycon.com/stew. Buyraycon.com/stew. I'm joined once again by Carol Roth, former investment banker and author of a great book, You Will Own Nothing, Your War with a New Financial World Order and How to Fight Back. Carol, thanks so much for coming back on the program.
Thank you.
I want to get your expertise here as we go through some of the economic stuff going on right now, because I think, you know, we both can see a lot of really good things that Donald Trump is doing. But of course, if the economy goes the wrong direction, a lot of those other things wind up drying up because people sort of abandon the cause generally. You know, it's the economy, stupid, still has some currency in the political world. So I want to look at tariffs with you because this is I'm not a tariff guy. A lot of people that are big Trump supporters have been kind of won over to the argument of tariffs, even though, you know, kind of mainstream conservative thought has not been in favor of them over a long period of time. So I wanted to kind of talk this through with you. Donald Trump has decided, he loves tariffs. He's always loved tariffs. It's one of his most consistent positions, kind of going back to the 80s. And he kind of, let me start with China. I feel like there's multiple levels of this. China is an adversary. We are obviously in sort of a trade war with China. Is there any benefit to putting tariffs on China?
So I think the whole discussion around tariffs, you know, to say anything is holistically good or holistically bad probably misses a little bit of the point. And the other thing to say is that we're in a very precarious financial position, a fiscal position that was a big mess left by the Biden administration. And I don't think anybody would argue with that. So the kind of tactics and strategies that may make sense at a different point in time may also not make sense now. And so I think that all needs to be part of the discussion, as well as the fact that people right now voted for Trump, not necessarily because of tariffs, but because they wanted some price stability and some stability from an economic standpoint. And that we have sort of this surgical set of maneuvers that needs to be done to walk around this precarious situation. So this is a long setup to answer your question about China. China, you know, is in many ways an adversary, but the reality is that we are very dependent upon China on both sides of the coin, so to speak. One is certainly our dependence on them for various components of making just about anything, as well as finished goods. This was really brought to light during COVID. And some companies went to work and, you know, shoring up their supply chains and making some, you know, changes. And some companies didn't. And other companies just frankly aren't able to. There are companies that produce things in China that you just won't be able to produce here in the United States ever at a price that somebody would buy it at. So there are all of those kinds of things going on. On the other side, I don't think people have an appreciation for, based on the trade dynamic, you know, how much of our assets, you know, whether that be treasuries, which certainly have come down, but to a larger extent, the stock market and to a smaller extent, real estate that the Chinese own. And so they really have us over a barrel to the extent that we take measures against them, you know, the repercussions. So I know a lot of people say, well, you know, we understand that, Carol, and that's why we're trying to, you know, right the ship here, and there's going to be some pain in doing that. But it does, again, going back to choreography, make sense to do that, A, once we have some of the other issues that are shorn up, B, when we have a better manufacturing base sort of in place to be able to make some substitutions, and, you know, C, when we've kind of dealt with maybe some of the issues in terms of the percentage of who owns which set of assets. So when it comes to national security issues, when it comes to ammunition and medicines and things like that, I think there's a different argument to be made, you know, for tariffs than there is in other places. And the idea that there's just sort of this blanket, you know, tariff pronouncements that isn't surgical, that isn't targeting these specific things and taking into account specific cases, is probably what gives me the most pause right now.
Yeah, and that's a really good breakdown of the kind of big situation going on here. Let's get a little more specific. As you mentioned, sometimes tariffs are just specific things. That's been the typical way that they've been utilized. The broad-based tariff of like this percentage on a country is not the typical way we've done it in American history. It's been more targeted on specific things. And I think there is a sense by a lot of people on the right now, which is like, this is good. We understand we might have a little bit of pain. We're going to raise prices a little bit potentially on some goods, but long term, we need to bring this manufacturing back here. And we're willing to kind of go down that road. And one thing I like to point people to, and maybe you have other examples as well, is the tariffs that were put on washing machines by the Trump administration back in 2017, 2018. Where they put them on foreign washing machines about 20%, the prices of washing machines went up by about 20%, as you probably would expect. Also, domestically made washing machines also went up. So you see that kind of opening. I guess if you're a company, you're like, everyone else is jacking up their prices, we should bring ours up. And I understand all that, and I think that's
put into the equation a little bit for some people. But I think what you see a lot of times, Carol, and correct me if I'm wrong, is basically just a benefit analysis. It's not a cost benefit analysis. And the cost benefit analysis of that move was, I think, adding 1,800 jobs at a cost of something like, you know, well over multiple billion dollars a year. It came down to $800,000 per job, the cost to the American people for those jobs. And I think when you run down that analysis, it just doesn't seem to make sense.
Yeah, I think that sometimes people get so focused on one aspect that they don't really look at it holistically. So as you said, you have the cost benefit piece, and then it's how it ties into all these other broad issues that are going on economically. And the answer I'm sure that both you and I, Stu, would get from somebody who is very pro-Trump is, hey, Trump is smarter than you. He's got people in his administration are smarter than you, and they're going to do things and you don't know what you're talking about. And, he has very smart people in his administration, Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, being one of them. And I actually think that that may be one of the reasons, that we've seen this tariff policy. You and I have talked about this a little bit before, but, there are some, clear trip wires that go along with this, bigger economic mess that have been left behind. One has been the strength of the dollar index, which is the dollar against a basket of other currencies internationally. And the other one is the yield on the 10-year treasury. And if both of those get to a certain level, basically that becomes a danger Will Robinson kind of signal that ends up creating a lot of chaos in the market and could really do some negative things. And so, we were in a very precarious situation. We were getting close to that danger level on both the dollar, DXY dollar index, as well as the 10-year several weeks ago, kind of, a little bit after the beginning of the year. And from these different machinations, lo and behold, the 10-year has now fallen very substantially, and the dollar yields has fallen very substantially, which gives them a little bit of breathing room to do other things and, not trip a debt spiral or the global financial markets melting down. That being said, the choreography then has to be considered on the other side, because if it is the tariffs driving lower stock market or recessionary fears or whatever it is, and then that ends up leading to fewer receipts by the government, even with DOGE, it could end up widening the deficit. Mm. And then we're back into the same problem of debt spiral, global markets spiraling out of control, plus potentially having a recession. So this is a very, very careful dance that must be had. And as I've said before, I'd like to see a little bit more of Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers than, a bull running through a china shop in terms of choreography. And, it being more surgical with the tariffs, I think would potentially accomplish more of what is being at least told to us. And me as a sort of somebody who's going through the economics of what's happening in worrying about this happening and that happening, seems like it might drive a better outcome in a very difficult and challenging situation than just kind of this big smattering across the board, especially, with Canada and Mexico, China. Yeah. Maybe there's a different argument to make. I also, as you know, I'm a small business advocate, so I worry about small businesses as well that don't have sort of the options that are available to some of these bigger companies.
Yeah, yeah. There's so much to say on this, and we're going to run out of time here. But let's go to Canada and Mexico, because look, I was talking about the different levels of this. China, I can understand they're an adversary. If we want to, maybe what we want to do is lower that relationship, and we just want to get out of it. And I would love us to see moving some of those arrangements to a place like India, which could still give us low cost goods and is much more aligned with us. I mean, they seem to love Trump over there. There's a lot of arguments on that. The individual item, like washing machines or steel or whatever, I don't like those things. But, you can see a lot of this happens in politics all the time, where there's protected industries and there's, people, there's favors done and all that stuff. And I don't like that part of government, but I'm used to it. I got to say, the Canada and Mexico stuff, I don't really get at all. Like, we do need allies. We do have allies. the border, he's taken care of without Mexico's help, it seems. The Canadian border, I don't think is that big of an issue, but you might be able to get some concessions out of that. But like fundamental things that Donald Trump has talked about, lowering costs, lowering energy costs, these things are core to what Trump supporters wanted, and they will be affected by this. And I don't know what the outcome is that he's looking for. What can you kind of give me a couple minutes just on that particular situation?
Yeah, amen to all that you've just said. And also, if you think that China is the main adversary, then one of the really great things that has happened is that manufacturing has moved from China to Mexico. Lots of companies, people who make medical devices and consumer products and everything in between have moved from being, entrenched in China to Mexico. And you may say, oh, well, we want it here in the U.S. But again, we have a high cost of energy. We have a high cost of labor. This isn't going to be feasible for everything. And having it aligned in North America, with an ally makes sense. So what we should be doing, and this is what Trump did during the first administration, right, is strengthening those trade ties with Mexico and with Canada. And for anybody who says, oh, well, it's not about that. It's about the border. Well, we got to win on the border. We've seen those encounters at the border drop off a cliff. So for the time being, let's take the win on that and focus on strengthening the allyship with our neighbors to the north and to the south and really fortifying what's going on in North America instead of picking fights with everybody. You've shown that you're the big dog. You've scored a victory. Like, now let's get serious and have alignment. We don't want to be at a hockey game where people are booing each other. It just doesn't make sense, especially if we're trying to really deal with issues like China and Russia and some of these really big scenarios. Also, we talk about this whole it's not fair on American companies. Guys, we don't export very much at all. Like, that is not our business. And so this whole idea that we're like losing out on all this money because they're putting a tariff on our export, like, what are we doing? Like, it's like $350 billion out of $29 trillion GDP that we have in terms of our exports to Canada. Like, it's just not a priority. The debt at $36.5 trillion is a priority. The amount of government spending at almost $7 trillion is a priority. The deficit at $2 trillion, which is about 7% of GDP, is a priority. $350 billion in exports to Canada is not moving the needle here. So when we think about, again, choreography, what makes sense, priorities, this just doesn't add up. And it, again, we love President Trump. We want him to be successful. And yes, there are some smart people around him, but there are also people with competing interests, and not everybody is necessarily thinking about things holistically. So it's important for us to push back. And frankly, Stu, even though, people are trying to support President Trump, when we're talking about a lot of these tariffs, particularly Canada and Mexico, they just have not been popular. They just haven't been.
I will say that one thing that it has come out of this as a positive is the Canada-U.S. rivalry in hockey is really entertaining right now. I will say that's, I'm not a hockey guy, but it's kind of fun to watch. So I don't know. I mean, it might cost us a few hundred billion dollars or so for it, but at least we're getting that, Carol. Carol Roth, be sure to grab a copy of her book. It is called You Will Own Nothing, Your War with a New Financial World Order and How to Fight Back. Carol, thanks so much for walking on through this. I know it's a pretty dense stuff, but I do appreciate you kind of taking us through it.
Absolutely. And let's just hope that this all gets resolved very quickly with a W, and let's move on to the big issues here, Stu.
Thanks, Carol.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
California Education Board is looking to change in the label standards to avoid discouraging and demotivating terms. Now, this is from Blaze, theblaze.com, by the way.
You have this situation where back in the day it was A, B, C, D, F. Remember those days? F is mean.
Right.
D sounds bad. I don't know why. There's letters. But, you know, you put an association on those letters. Eventually, they do seem to feel like maybe you're not achieving as much. So they changed it to standard exceeded, standard met, standard nearly met, or standard not met. Now, okay, I don't know if that makes any difference. People will look at it as just the same as A, B, C, D, or A, B, C, D, F, or whatever. You're going to have different levels. Of course, that runs its course now, and now they have to change it again. And so now they want to change it to advanced, proficient, foundational, or inconsistent. Now, what happens if you just suck? Because inconsistent does not cover that. That, you know, like if I tried to, become an NFL quarterback right now and I threw 12 interceptions in the first quarter, that would not be inconsistency. The word doesn't describe what I'm doing. I would be terrible. But that's what we do now in California schools. And that's honestly like the least offensive thing happening in California schools right now. I mean, at the very least, they don't like, you know, make you change genders if you get a question wrong. So that's positive. Arizona is seeing a huge drop in illegal border crossings. This is a big development as well. Again, I said this is kind of the most universal success of the first 6 weeks of the Trump administration. Now, if you go back and trace it, you can see a drop toward the when the Biden administration got into campaign mode. There was a drop that was not as drastic, but did come down before Trump actually got into office. But if you see the chart we're showing now, you go back to the turn of the century here. The numbers were pretty high at the beginning of the 2000s. They came down, continued to come down. And even through Barack Obama's terms, it was, you know, relatively on the low side, was pretty low all the way through the Trump side, except for that one. If you remember, it was one big flare up that was lasted a month or two in the Trump term and then came back down to low levels. Then you just see an absolute like mountain on this line chart. To describe for podcasters, we're up to 200,000 a month, really, really high. Now we're down to 8,326. That's border apprehensions on the U.S.-Mexico border, by the way. And we've talked about that drop, but to see it in line graph form, you know me, I love graphs. So that's where we are right now on that one. And we all finally also have a Panama Canal update. If you remember, one of the priorities, and I honestly knew this before Trump even came into office. He hadn't really talked about it publicly, but Glenn had talked to him about it. And he was talking to a lot of people about his interest in the Panama Canal, how important Donald Trump believed it was. We went to Panama. We said, hey, we need to get this back. We need to get China out of there. We do have a development there. A U.S. firm is now agreeing to buy the Panama Canal ports at the center of Trump fury, says CNN. Why you'd have to write it like that, I have no idea. It's important to the United States. What do you, Trump fury? It's just so weak. Whatever happened to freaking journalism where they tell you the news? Now they got to put fury in it for no reason. But what I will say, good news and bad news here. Good news is China, was Hong Kong, which used to kind of be okay, but now we just kind of let them roll over Hong Kong in the middle of the Biden administration. So, okay, that's bad now. And so it won't be China anymore involved. However, it will be BlackRock, which if you've read The Great Reset over by Glenn Beck or many other stories about BlackRock, not necessarily the thing that might make you the most comfortable in the world, but probably better than the Chinese Communist Party running it. So that's good. So a little development in Panama. If there's more that comes to that story, we will give it to you. Before we go, I want to tell you about a little protein supplement. It's a new version of this. Remember, I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Nutria. It gives you all the protein that you need to get through the day. It's delicious, and it's available. And you might think, well, these things, you know, these little boutique, you know, protein bars or whatever, really, really expensive. It's not exactly a protein bar. It looks a little bit more like this, a rat, a giant waterlogged rat with bright orange teeth. And you might say, and it is called a Nutria, and Nutria sounds like a protein supplement, but, you know, it's a rat
And you might say, I'm not taking any protein out of my rat. Well, the U.S. government disagrees with you because apparently they're becoming an invasive species, and this is real. The solution to controlling rat-like rodent population may be to eat them, the government says. Save a swamp, sauté a nutria. They say it tastes like rabbit, which is not something I'm ever going to confirm for you. I'm never going to find out. It sounds absolutely revolting, but if you eat a nutria, let me know.